The following podcast is an Embassy Row production.
Hey everyone, welcome to Scissoring Isn't a Thing. As always, I am Darren Karp, and I am here with my ta-da queen, Liz Cully. Every week, it's something different, Liz.
I love tie-dye. And for the record, before the pandemic, I was wearing tie-dye. Also, I would like you to only address me as a social media influencer because I hit 10,000 followers yesterday.
I am so proud of you for this accomplishment. I respect you too much to just call you a social media influencer because I know what is involved in your day life. But mazel tov on hitting the five figs. Mazel
you know
tov.
Who I haven't met in real life, but she posted about me to get to 10,000, and I thought it was and I keep asking to hang out with her, and she just doesn't answer that part, but then is just really nice. Okay. Is MJ.
MJ from Shaws of Sunset. Hilarious. Well, I love MJ. MJ's my girl.
No, I do too, but isn't that it's a little strange. I'm like, thanks. What?
She's anyway. A supporter of women. She's a lover of all. I'm just so happy. Like, what was happier? The day that you got to 10,000 followers or your wedding day to you, Rachel?
Okay, let's relax here. Well, obviously, when I got to 10,000 followers. Yeah. I'm just kidding. No, like, of course.
Wait, did you watch? We have a lot of just TV roundup because our episode today, our interview was like, we want to let it speak for itself. Hey, Rachel. Rachel just came into frame in a sliver, people, and Liz moved the computer over so I could not see Rachel for even a second.
Because she doesn't want to be.
Okay, but like, it's me. Like, it's not like, it's not like in front of millions of viewers. Like, it's me, and you moved the computer so I couldn't see Rachel. Fucked up.
I know.
Fucked
she doesn't up. Like to be on camera, so I moved.
Fucked
Rachel,
up.
I was doing you a favor, and I moved the camera, and Rachel, or Darren was like, why did you just do that?
Yeah, I was like, she's embarrassed.
I'm protecting her. Is she? Privacy.
Masturbating. That's a whole other story. You got to watch our Instagram stories to see that. But okay, so we have a longer interview. So I just have like a lot of like TV roundup stuff to kind of get to. Okay. Well, first off, the morning show's plotline. Are you watching the morning show?
Yes, okay. I am. I don't know.
So it's
totally caught up though, but I watched it enough where that I know what I think you're going to talk about.
You know about Reese Witherspoon and Juliana Margulies.
Yeah, which was like a lot. I don't know if it was hotter than I thought it would be. Like,
I thought it was less hot, but only because I find Reese Witherspoon to be so straight. It's not Juliana Margulies. I find Reese Witherspoon to be so hetero that I can't believe it. Like, and she's a great actress. This is nothing against her. Right. This is just like her roles are notoriously hetero. Whereas I feel like Juliana Margulies has played these like salacious, sexy, kind of fluidy type of women. I could just see it a lot more than Reese. Yeah. But that's why. But obviously a plot point's going to be that, and it's unclear if Reese is a lesbian or not because they've like danced around that she is, or maybe she's bi. Unclear. I don't want to name danced her. But
no, I know. I feel like you're right. It's interesting. I think that they've sort of left out her. But didn't she have sex? I can't remember. It was too long of a gap.
It was too long of a gap. And I don't really remember Reese like in this Bradley, the character Bradley. I don't remember Bradley having any sexual relationship with anyone.
We just know that she got pregnant really young.
That's it. All we know. Right. But like that might not have been for love or anything. So I'm very curious to see how that happens. I mean, obviously, I think this is hitting on a point that we talk about literally every week.
Do you think it's queer baiting a little?
Yeah, but like, what wouldn't queer baiting look like? Like, I do think it's important to kind of show, like, hey, I grew up. I mean, I don't know where the show is going, so I can't predict. But right now, Bradley's basically saying, you know, Juliana Margulies is like, hey, you know, like, go kind of use your gayness as a plus to go host the presidential debate or whatever they're talking about in the show, which I'm not necessarily unfor. I think you kind of got to use what you got. And, you know, Bradley gets too scared to do that for whatever reason. Right. She grew up in a conservative family and la, 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 la. And so,
Darren, do you think that I'm Juliana or I'm Bradley? And you're Juliana or you're Bradley.
Between the two of us? Like if one of us, if we were going to like
I feel like, no, just like in the show, like I actually think you're Bradley and I'm Juliana.
I do think I'm Bradley. I do think I'm Bradley. I actually think that Bradley even described herself as libertarian. I could be wrong on that, but I feel like first season, because I feel like I clung to that. But like, yes, I think personality wise, like
I'm Juliana.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And I'm Reese. And I don't think necessarily that I'm the heterosexual. Like, I don't think like
me as a person is
as heterosexual as Reese. In the show, I am Bradley. And in the show, you are Juliana Margulies. Okay. So when you said it was queer baiting.
Well, no, I just wanted to know what your, it's funny. So I put on Instagram on the scissoring story. I was like, do we ship this? Like when it first.
Right. I saw that. And I was like, I don't even remember what I voted. I think I was like, no.
Yeah. So that's my question, is that maybe queer baiting isn't the right. I don't know. I'm curious to hear what you felt when they first kissed in the limo.
I was like, oh.
Yeah, me too.
Like normally, especially maybe because I'm used to the L word and we have to get to the finale on that in a moment. But normally I feel like when it's female, maybe it's other people and I'm just literally paying more attention to female. I feel like in order to show that this is like, oh, potentially queer, they show subtle movements and they show like, oh, I'm checking you out, or like a touch of the hand, a graze of the leg. There was like none of that. Like I didn't sense any sexual tension. In fact, Bradley just...
I did.
Made out with her kind of randomly. Only in the car did I see that. I didn't see that kind of before.
I sort of got the vibe when she was like, when Juliana was, they were outside walking with the coffee cup and she dropped it. Anyway, this is really becoming like a rap.
This really is.
Episode, which we don't want to do. But I don't know. I saw little moments here and there.
Let's see how the storyline plays out to see if it's queer baiting. But I think in general, the only reason I would...
You didn't take it that way.
No, I think the only way I would take it as queer baiting is if it's like a plot line that has no point except to like get in male viewers. That to me is more queer baiting, or being like, look, we're so blah, 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 blah. But I don't think they're doing that. I think it's going to be an interesting tell of like, maybe, you know, someone coming out publicly on television or something.
Which
like that.
Which straight do you think is the better kisser? Jennifer Aniston, Reese Witherspoon, or Julianne Margulies?
Juliana Margulies. Really good question. And I want to say it's Juliana Margulies.
I think so, too.
I think she's maybe it's a brunette kisser thing. Like, maybe that's what it is. I don't know. I tend to, like, go for brunettes more. Or something like that. Maybe that's what it is. I just think that Reese and Jen are so straight as people. Like they're just, I would be shocked if Reese Witherspoon had kissed a girl before that.
Do you think Jennifer Aniston's kissed a girl? I don't.
She did pretend to kiss Winona Ryder in that Friends episode from when they were in high school. So maybe like, I don't know.
Just a question.
Just a question. Okay. L word finale. What did you think? I know. That was my thought. There it is again. My thought too. I thought overall great season. I was looking forward to it every week. I thought the shakeups were good. I thought it was kind of a nice play. I thought the Rosie thing, obviously they're going to get another season because they can't really end like this. But like,
I thought
the Rosie thing was going to like play out a little bit more. And I know we left on the Tina bet thing, but part of me is a little bit like, how long can we use that storyline now?
I agree.
It's been used 9 times with them. And I hate to say it, I don't believe Shane and Tess, but that's just, I just.
Okay, well, so that's so interesting that you say that.
I don't believe it.
Because Rachel felt the same, but I disagree. This is
I like them both, by the way, and think they're both hot. So,
no, I know.
Okay,
hold
okay,
on.
Okay.
This
okay
is the first relationship ever that Shane has been
Carmen
in that I'm actually sort of – I actually believe this. I did like it, but I believe this more. And she'll never come on the show probably, so I'll say it. I don't believe Kate Moaning is like the best actor all the time. I think she's fun to watch, but I don't think she's like that believable, which is different. And so sometimes when she's with,
it's a little bit like Reese being homo. You're like, I don't know.
Totally.
Okay.
But I really like her and Tess. I think Tess was great. I think I was very satisfied with this season. But the ending for me was like, Also, like Joey Taboni's sister, like Jacqueline, like never did she ever look at your DMs.
No, I doubt
me neither.
It. I
Do you
it.
Die?
I died all of this.
Well, because she's in rehab. I'm kidding. The show.
Oh, I was going to be like, let's not say anyone. Yeah, she's in rehab, which, again. Yeah,
Finley's in rehab. Like, see you later. Actually, sort of works. Can I just tell you one really funny thing? And we're going to have this person on the show in a couple of weeks, and we do need to get to this amazing episode. But there is a huge thing in LA, Darren, about PAs and recovery. Like, I can't explain to you how many sober lesbians that used to be on the party scene are like PAs. And if anyone's listening that's from LA, please DM me or DM Scissoring and we can laugh about this. Yes, it's like a whole thing.
Well, that's sad. Whole thing. Like, I mean, it's sad in the terms of like, I hope they're not, if it's like a pandemic of like every PA, like having to drink because they hate their lives
it's the other way around. It's like girls that are, and boys and whoever, but like people that were sort of messes in their 20s get their shit together and then become PAs. No,
I see it.
It's just a very funny thing. Like they'll be like a les on set and they're like sober and they're a PA. And
I'm all for that.
So I kind of like love Marja doing that because
it's accurate.
It is accurate. I mean, yeah, but in all, my read was.
You know what I thought of that scene though when they're doing the intervention was. If it were me, and obviously, like, I've seen the show Intervention. I've never been in one. I know friends who have been in them. I would feel wildly uncomfortable that my boss of a TV show was giving me the intervention. Like,
okay, but first of all, they're really unprofessional. Their relationship fucked on her couch.
I know. And I'm like, lesbians aren't like this.
Alice was going to pay for it.
I know. And then I was like, oh, I wonder if Andy would pay for mine.
Yeah, he would.
Made me thinking.
Okay. All right. Well, before we get to the most incredible Shea Coulee, which, by the
just
way,
Shea
listeners.
Coulee. You don't even need to say incredible Shea Coulee. You just need to say Shea Coulee because it's implied.
Well, so this interview was actually rescheduled since June. Remember?
Yep.
Shea was going to be on our Pride
extravaganza. Shea moved. Shea was doing a lot of stuff.
Which is totally fine.
Totally fine.
But I'm just saying the anticipation was there. You know?
I think when Shay hopped on, I think we just collectively screamed and then could hit record. And I think he was a little bit like, oh, taken aback by these two girls being really obsessed with him. But he was pretty fantastic. And honestly, I kind of learned a lot about this, just how he grew up. And he went to high school with Joakim Boester, which I never knew. And I love that. And I think it's great. And Shea Coulee is very Coulee. Very Coulee.
Shea Coulee is the most Coulee, actually.
Most is the Coulee. The cream of the Coulee is Shea Coulee.
And with that,
there it
everyone,
is.
Please enjoy the episode. I'm going to introduce our incredible guest. I'm so excited. Darren knows I've been sort of dying, freaking out for this has been in the works. I will just say at top, your bio was so long. I did have to cut it down to the highlights because you're a very accomplished. So without further ado, dear, sweet baby listeners, we have the one and only Shea Coulee. I can't even believe I'm saying it. Who is, hold on, wait for the bio. Shea is a drag superstar, recording artist, activist, costume designer, known for their fashion forward editorial looks.
Preach.
Very true. In July 2020, Coulee was crowned the winner of RuPaul's Drag Race All-Stars 5, which we have talked at nauseam on the show that we argue being an all-star is like, where they debuted their newest music single, Collide, featuring rapper Mickey Blanco. Okay. Before All Stars, Coulee placed as a finalist on RuPaul's Drag Race 9, which, by the way, I'm a Cancer. Also, my favorite number is 9. I feel like we're already here, where they slayed the runways and tied for the most challenge wins in the show's history. In the past year alone, Coulee was featured, in the Savage Fenty fashion show with our girl Rihanna, all of our hall passes.
Never heard of Rihanna before. I have no idea who that is. Yeah.
And this is also for my like
Condé Nast nerdiness yeah. was the face of, excuse me, Maison Valentino, excuse moi, launched their own beer, Chez Coulée ale.
Yeah. With an accent.
And
though.
A portion, I mean, I'm, thank you. Yes. I'm just so excited. I'm sweating. And a portion of all the profits were donated to Trans Tech, an organization dedicated to helping transgender people kickstart their trajectories in the workplace. I mean, I'm almost done.
Yes.
I know. A passionate and vocal advocate for the LGBTQ rights and racial equality, Coulée spoke at the Drag March for Change in support of Black Lives Matter movement in 2020. Up next, and I hope this is, we can talk about this a little bit today, Coulée is performing in an international stage tour, acting in a forthcoming digital series, and has launched a new podcast, which we will talk about, Wanna Be On Top.
So many questions.
Chez Coulée,
welcome.
Welcome to the show.
Oh my gosh. Wow. What a lovely introduction. Holy moly.
It's your fault Chez, because if you-
Your fault.
Yeah. If you weren't accomplished, we would have just introduced you as like, we got Chez Coulée. But no, you had to off and do everything. You know, every guest that we have on Scissoring is a Thing, we usually ask them how they like to identify, usually gender preferences, pronouns appropriately, as well as sexuality, just because we kind of dive deep and we want to make sure that we're doing you justice.
Yes. As far as pronouns are concerned, I will respond to anything that's said out of respect. And as far as sexuality is concerned, I would consider myself pansexual. And
I have a chance? I know. Oh my God.
We have a chance. Maybe Chez Coulée might date us. Maybe.
I mean,
we have a
I'm glad I wore a leopard today. And I tried a wing. I tried a wing today.
Yes.
Oh, good.
Is
okay.
If you don't mind me asking, is the pansexuality something that you recently discovered? Have you always felt pansexual? Because I felt like when I was growing up, I didn't know that term. So it feels newer. Walk me through that.
Yeah. I feel that like that was like a recent discovery only because I was like having a conversation with a friend who also identifies, it was Bob the drag queen actually.
Who's been on our show, who's a friend of the podcast.
Yes, yes. And we were just kind of talking about like our sexual experiences and they were very similar. And Bob was just all like, oh, well like girl, like you're like pansexual because like, I don't limit myself to people, I just don't really limit myself. I feel like it's much more of a personal energy connection. And if I'm attracted to somebody, then I'm attracted to somebody.
I heard that.
And honestly, like that's how it should be. Like I would describe myself. I mean, I've always said lesbian because like I am attracted to women.
Yeah, exactly.
But you know what? Mm-hmm. I'm attracted to trans men. I'm attracted to trans women. Like, I don't know. That
same.
Kind of makes
exactly.
me pan. Like, it's a personal individual thing, I think. Like, and mm-hmm. even people you're supposed to be attracted to, I'm like, hell no, I'm not attracted to you.
Exactly.
So maybe I'm pan, Liz.
You know what's so funny is that my wife and I were at dinner last night and somehow Pete Davidson got brought up. Mm-hmm. Don't ask. Let's
as
keep
one
going
does,
on the journey.
As one does.
As, right. one does. As one does. And I was like, that dude must have the best vibe in, because he
person.
Just rips through in person. Yeah. And I was like, maybe we would both fall in love with Pete Davidson in real life. And I do agree. It's a really energy. It's energetic. Like, I don't know. I think I love that, Darren. I think hopefully we should all really be pansexual because it's a vibe.
Right.
It's really a vibe.
And you can't help who you're attracted to.
Exactly.
So yeah, we should all kind of be pan. It makes mm-hmm. sense. It tracks. I'm changing.
It does
it
make
does.
Sense.
Yeah.
Now, for the listeners that have apparently been not only living in their homes, but perhaps underneath their beds or their couches and don't know your story, where can you just give us kind of the lay of the land? Like, where did you grow up?
Yes. So I was born in this small little town called Warsaw, Indiana. And then when I was 5, we moved to Illinois, to a small town called Plainfield, where I spent the majority of, I was basically there until I grew up and graduated high school. So like moving from Indiana to Plainfield was definitely culture shock because like there was like nothing but white people in Plainfield. And I was like, wow, okay. until I got
and
to,
you're
like,
in a place called Plainfield.
Girl, right?
You I can't get whiter than that.
And, like,
it is
crying.
So white.
I was like, this place is so country. Why are we here? But then like it, like when I got into like middle school, that's when like my like we started like merging with other areas, and then I started to go to school with like fellow Black kids, so it was like much easier then. But like I was in Plainfield until I graduated high school, and then I went to Columbia College in Chicago, where I focused on theater and finished with my bachelor's in costume design. And then like, I would say like a month and a half after graduation, like 2 months, like in July of that summer after I graduated from college, I just tried drag for the first time and I got bit by the bug and I was like, oh damn. Okay, well, I'm really into this. I think I'm gonna audition for RuPaul's Drag Race. And I did 5 times. Like literally, I don't know what I was thinking. I was like 4 months into doing drag. Like I started in July and like 4 months later, they were like holding auditions for like season 5. And I auditioned for 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9. And then I got on season 9.
It's all about and persistence. You have won, I think I was doing the math. Hold on, let's look
more
at the
competitions,
notes.
I think, than you any have, other.
No, you've won 1.9 billion yeah. challenges. I believe. I was trying to count
well,
them.
And not for nothing, Shay, but Liz got me into watching Drag Race. Like, I had known about it, but she was like, I'm a reality junkie. She was like, how are you not watching this? Like, you need to get into it. And so last season was my first, like, start to finish All-Star season watching it live. And yes. I was talking to Liz and breaking it down. And Liz was like, yes, like during regular season, like we wanted Simone to win. We were rooting for Simone. She was like, but if you win All-Stars, it's so much grander. She's like, because the competition is so much higher that if you can walk away being an All-Star, it's like winning $1 million in drag culture. Do you feel that way? Like having won All-Stars and not the regular season?
I mean, it definitely just wasn't my time to win season 9. And I feel like everything happens for a reason. Totally. And I think it's always amazing to be able to reintroduce yourself to the fandom and like, you know, check in with them and let them like familiarize themselves with you again and your story. And, you know, so I took like a little bit of time because I was like, I just want to like travel the world, like have my drag become like more enriched and then go back and do it again. And I'm so glad that I did, you know, that was like definitely my time. And I feel like winning All-Stars is definitely like, you know, the creme de la creme of like crowns to get.
The Kool-Aid of the Kool-Aid, if I must ask.
Yes.
The Kool-Aid of the Kool-Aid.
Listen to me right now, Kim. You came on All-Stars season. There was not a chance in motherfucking hell from anybody.
That you weren't
going to
win.
You walked into the workroom and we were like, okay.
Yes.
Like, and everyone can
even
just,
watching it back, I was like, I bet you Shea Coulee wins. Like, not knowing, like, not getting
100%.
But we have a lot of Drag Race questions for you, but I actually want to go back to what you were saying about growing up, because you said that, like, you grew up in fucking Warsaw and then Plainfield, and you said it was like hella fucking white. Did you feel different because of a racial thing and a sexuality thing? Just a racial thing? What was the sexuality aspect?
Oh, just all across the board. It's just like, you know, you think about Plainfield and it just really was so much of a reflection of like white, conservative. Like, I mean, it's like I would say semi-conservative, you know, definitely like somewhat democratic, but that is a lie. It is Chicago that really makes Illinois democratic. I'm like, there's still so many conservative people that were there. And it was just like tough because I was going to school with kids that were just like a reflection of their parents, the things that their parents like fully, you know, said behind like closed doors. And then, you know, I would experience that in school. And I was just all like, oh, damn it. I just can't wait to get out of here and just like, you know, just like spread my wings. It's like, I was like, this is not my town. I'm not going to stay here. So I did not hesitate to hightail my ass out of there.
Do you still have ties there though?
Yeah.
Have you gone back after now that you're famous?
I mean, my mom still lives in our family home there. So I go back for like holidays and like, you know, little weekend visits every once in a while, but we just like chill at the house. It's not like I'm trying to go out shopping at Walmart Supercenter or anything like that.
I know, but I really
I really want you to.
Only because really quickly, Darren knows very well, Carson Kressley was on the show and we spoke to Carson about when, like, he lives straight up and he went and bought the big ass house back in Pennsylvania, like where he grew up. And he says that, you know, after he did Queer Eye and, like, you know, everything started happening, he would like go into the Walmart and be like, oh, yep, that's me. Yeah. Hello. And it was sort of this fun moment for him back and forth. So when you do go to the Walmart, please give us a call because I want the rundown.
Okay. You know what? Now that you say that, maybe I'll look at buying one of the big houses in Plainfield. I heard there's a couple of them for sale.
I was going to say, it's kind of the best way to change the demographic, though. Were you able to explore your sexuality when you were growing up? Was there any other potential? I mean, obviously there were other gay people, but that doesn't mean that they were out. Did you know of
them? Oh, yeah, no. I went to high school with Joel Kim Booster. So he was running around being a big old. So it was, and we were like literally in school like during the same time. So
That's amazing.
I feel like it was like whirlwind queer boys of color running around high school being like, yeah, so I'm gay.
Yes.
Like, because when I came out, I really came out with like ferocity because I was just like, that was like the one thing that I was like bullied for because, you know, I was still, even though I was in this small town, like I always knew who I was. And I had this confidence, but like, you know, being gay was something at the time that was like still like made fun of, but there was like, you know, there were shows like Will and Grace on, so I was starting to see like representation there and like things like Queer as Folk, and I was just like, you know, like, yeah, you can't be like rude to gay people anymore, that's lame. And so then when I came out of the closet, you know, like, because it used to be people would just be like, so Jaren, are you gay? And I'd be like, you know, no. And then like, you know, they would chuckle and that was like the thing, because like, you know, everyone knew I was lying. And then one day they asked me and I was just all like, yes I am, so what? And I remember him just stopping dead in his tracks, just like,
yeah, you're right.
Because he didn't have a follow-up question. He didn't have one. So then when I answered the question and they were like, oh, damn it. I was like, oh, yeah. Like the moment I just owned it and I saw that I took my power back, I was just all like, oh, my God, these straight boys are so weak. And I'm about to rip them to shreds for these last 2 years of high school. And it really was that. Like, I at the end of it, I like won people around to like my side because I was just all like, yeah, I'm gay. Like, so what? Why is it bothering you? And then no one wanted to seem like uncool. Like they were really bothered right. by me. And so it's just like, and if they did act bothered, then I would like read them like so fiercely because like, I feel like that's just like a skill that so many queer people have is like, you know, we're witty, we're clever. So I was just like, oh, if you want to try and throw something out, I can read your outfit, I can read your split ends, I can read like all of that and like have everyone in study hall.
Don't read my split ends. Kiki. I'm like,
I know.
Look, we're coming out of a pandemic. Ooh. I feel like we should all be forgiving to anyone who has not been able to go and get their hair taken care of. But this was like 2006, you know. This is right people before the really stock market crashed. No, so we were doing great right. at this point, you know?
Have you had anybody from, I mean, I always, Darren knows, I love these stories of the ghosts from high school and middle school that were mean to you. Have any of them returned into the DMs or—
like wanted tickets, you know, or something from you and like asked you for shit? And you're like, bitch?
Honestly, no, because I don't check those DMs even. So even if they've tried, like now I'm kind of curious to go and check my Facebook DMs.
Well, you might see a couple from me.
Yeah, yeah. Like I'm literally, gosh, I don't even check Facebook. Like when I was moving into the building yesterday, I bumped into one of my new neighbors and he's like, hi, you know, very like nice to meet you. And he's like, you know, I've kind of like met everybody in the building because it's a brand new building. So people have just like been like slowly like filling it in where we're like one of like the last people. And he's just like, yeah, we have like this Facebook group. And I was like, oh God, it's like,
you're like new.
It's like, so I have to try and remember my Facebook password to like meet my new neighbors.
Do not join the building Facebook page.
Honestly, I don't want that. I think I'll tell my partner about that. He can join. I'm just gonna go and like leave like four packs of like Shea Kool-Aids in front of everyone's doors and just be like, hi, nice to meet you. And
honestly, if I moved into if a building I lived next to Shea Coulee, were
like, what would I do? I'd be like, Shea Coulee, can I have a cup of sugar every day? You're like, girl, get your own fucking sugar finally. You're over my apartment way too much.
I mean, honestly, I'm really trying to cut back on the sugar, so we don't have much around here anyway. So I'm gonna have to ration for my neighbors.
Shea, do you have a green juice? A healthy green juice for me is what I want. But
I'd be like, actually, I do have a juicer. Come on in.
Yes. And you said that you you know, you kind of just like, you got into drag, just like you were like, oh, I'll decide to do this. What was your first drag experience? You know it costs so much money to look as like turn as you all look. I know it's like, for me, it seems very daunting because I don't even know where I would start.
Shay's got the bones, she's got that facial structure.
She's got the facial structure, but
yeah, it's funny because I get my bone structure from my dad, you know.
It's a nice bone structure.
I know. It's I love very, how it, very it, it beautiful. Can turn so feminine, so right. But, so my first time doing drag, I was already, you know, cast in a show. I was already booked. And the show was my friend Jeez Louise's all black burlesque review called Jeezy's Juke Joint. Now, I was booked to be just a dancer, just to come in and like support, because it was like the first one. We had danced together in college and I was like, yes, absolutely, I'll come in and support. Now, the way that this story goes, there's two different accounts. Her account is different than mine, but I will tell you what my experience was. Now, I am also a stoner, so I am not passing any judgment, but I know
Darren's
I
in love.
Know I'm my over. Girl, Jeez Louise, likes to smoke down. Now, I was on an email chain that was like, please submit your act description for your solo act, lighting cues, yada, 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 by the end of this weekend. And I remember being like, I was like, I'm only supposed to just like come in and dance. Like, what does she mean solo act? Like, how did I get like looped into this? So I conceptualized, put together like an act, and I was just all like, it was a burlesque show, and I was like, I don't really know if I can do this whole like Chippendales as like kind of like striptease. But I was like, it would be really fierce if I did it in drag. And so I like sent her the description for this act. I was just like, I'm gonna do this like burlesque routine to Beyonce's Sugar Mama. And then come out in like a tuxedo jacket, like shirt, a tie, very like Judy Garland and Easter Day Parade kind of moment. And, you know, do the damn thing. She had no intention of putting me in the show as a solo act. Like, this was something that was clearly unintentional, but she gets my email with this whole conceptualized act. And she's just like, well, I didn't cast Jaren as a solo act, but
I can't pass this up either. Right?
I think I'm just going to give them the opportunity to come out here and do the damn thing. Gosh, I will never forget. I was getting ready to go into the summer and I was like waiting. Well, I remember I was going to check to see where they were in the lineup, because I was like, I feel like they should be like, it should be like around my time. And I literally go to like creak open the door to like see where they're at. And all I hear is Shea Coulee. Like, and I was like just literally rush out onto the stage. And like, what I didn't know is right before this, Jeez Louise was like, yeah, our next like burlesque entertainer is a drag queen. And like the majority of the audience was like black women in their like 40s and 50s, like mostly like middle age kind of like crowd. And so she said they kind of were like silent, like, And so then I come out in my little tuxedo jacket and like I was like backlit and just like legs and like pumps. They started screaming so loud that I could like barely even hear the music starts. But like, I did my whole little number. Those aunties like jumped to their feet. Like they were screaming, clapping, cheering, going off. And like I had, in all my years of doing like theater and acting and stuff through college and high school and middle school, I had never had such a visceral reaction like that from an audience. And I was like, so I think I should do drag.
Yeah, how old were you at this point?
I was 22.
Wow.
Yeah. Which now, nowadays, seems like a late start to be starting doing drag.
Well, because of, I feel like Drag Race. I mean,
it's encouraged younger people. Yes.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
How did you come up with the name Shea Coulee? Like, by that time, you already had that moniker.
So yeah.
How did you come up with it?
Well, my middle name is Shea, but it's spelled K-Y-E-I. It's Swahili, and it means beautiful boy. And so I was like, well, that kind of like works, you know, for this whole like gender bending experience. But I was like, no one will know how to read that. Like when they're looking at my name on a lineup, you know, at an amateur show, I was like, I know that no one's going to get that. So I switched the spelling of that to be like Shea Butter. And right, because I was looking at all the different ways to spell Shea, and I was just like S-H-E-A, like the butter just feels like, you know, some African Shea Butter. Like, I was like, that's her. And then Coulee comes from this little like riddle, this little song that's like Shea Shea Coulee Shea Confisa Confisa La La Ala Kila La She Hayende She Ha and Day. And I was just like, okay, well then I'll just be Shea Coulee. And then that was it. And I remember too, because I was with like my best friend, Tiger Lily, who was the one that was like, you should really like check out this show, RuPaul's Drag Race, because I watch these girls and I feel like you would kill this. I was like, okay. And we were like working on this film. We were like costume designing this film, and we were like sewing, listening to Lady Gaga's like Paparazzi. And I remember I was like tossing around. She's like, you have to come up with a name, you know, if you're going to be doing this show. And I remember I was just like doing it just like internally. And then I just said the name like Shea Coulee aloud. And she like stopped dead in her tracks. And she was like, that's it. She's like, that's your name. And I was like, right. I was like, it rolls off the tongue. It just like sounds good. And from then on, you know, I've been Shea Coulee.
Prodigy from the
start.
It's
a solid. Solid name. It's a solid one. Okay, this is sort of ridiculous, but I have to ask. Did Blac Chyna thank you?
I know Naomi Campbell thanked you.
For doing her so well. Oh, yeah.
She sent me a video at the finale for season 9. Yeah, it's like standing in front of her like Lamborghini. She was like, hey, girl. She's like, thank you. You slayed. I was like, much appreciated. I love it. And then what was so crazy.
She said, much appreciated.
It was so crazy. It's been like, even after that, where was I? I was at, because my friend used to work at Nordstrom in Beverly Hills, and I was doing something, but I was like, hey, I think I'm like by your Nordstrom's, like, let me come say hi. I do, and I like go to leave to go back to my Airbnb, and I'm like walking out like to the corner to like meet my Lyft driver, and literally she pulls up right in front of me, like in this like pink Lamborghini, and I just was like, and I couldn't even fix my mouth to like say like, Blac Chyna, it's me. Like, I was just sitting there like, wow, there she is. Just like 10
You didn't say me. Anything?
Yeah.
You know, she was focused on driving, and I'm not the type of person to sit there and distract somebody because like, you know.
Fair. In a pink Lamborghini that she probably does not own.
Like talk about intimidating.
Not want to wreck her rental.
She was like,
you know what I mean?
Mm-mm. I was like, you go ahead. You drive safe, girl. You looking good.
That's like kismet, though. That's meant to be. That says something to me. Like, that's the universe coming into play in some sort of weird way to me. I got to ask you this. If you were to choose three things, whether it's, like, it could be, like, an actual object, like mascara or a wig, or, like, a personality trait, what are three things that you need to be a drag queen?
Delusion. I think delusion is really, really important. I feel like it really helps the fantasy. Like, I feel like delusion just adds to the camp factor that is drag. And it like goes beyond like confidence. Like confidence, yes, is key, but you have to go beyond confident and be delusional. So that is like absolutely key. You gotta like, whatever this reality is telling you, you're like, mm-mm. Mm-mm-mm. You're like, I'm making like my own scenario and I'm going to go with that. Like, you have to live your own fantasy in order to be a successful drag queen. So that's number one, be delusional. Number two, a really, really, really good friend, mentor, or just community member to help guide you and keep you straight, let you know, like, ma'am, that is not.
Who's right. that person for you?
Yeah.
That's, well, I have like people.
I have like, an entourage.
I have a village.
Got a posse.
Like, I have a village. Like, everybody plays such a specific role. But I would say like my ride or die, Tiger Lily, my partner, Dan, and my publicist, Sarah, my assistant.
We love you, Sarah.
Other manager, Dalen, like we got like a team, and like, and even now it's crazy because like, even though I provide support to my drag daughters, Kinsey, Bambi, and Chloe, it is also like, a way that they, you know, we have like a family now. So we like look out for each other. So, you know, I'm blessed to have multiple people in my life that like really help like hold me down. But if you could find one, just to begin with one, you know, like Tiger was like the first one. So she was like my one that like, you know, held me down. Gotcha. So number three, a comfy pair of shoes with an ankle strap. Ankle straps are important because especially when you're like
flipping
beginning,
around.
I think a lot of people will find that their ankles are the weak spots for them when it comes to wearing heels. So having just a little bit of extra support there just like helps you to withstand having to perform, walk around, do the damn thing. Get a nice comfy heel with an ankle strap. And it also protects you from like rolling your ankle too.
I mean, that Lord, I was going to say no. is kind of the biggest one. Well, Great things. There have been now 13 seasons of Drag Race. You have appeared on both, at least the US franchises.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of have a two-part question. One, how would you like to see Drag Race evolve if you think that it should or could? And then two, who have you never lip sync battled that you'd like to?
Definitely think that there's evolution within the franchise because, you know, we've done, I mean, we've already seen such a big evolution with the franchise with going into like other markets and other countries and introducing us to even more and more queens. And as far as somebody that I would love to lip sync battle against that I haven't, I would love, well, it's funny because I've said this before, but I'm like, now, it, I was like, I have a crown, and actually so does she. Even though I'm like terrified of her because she's such an amazing performer, I would love to lip sync against Kylie Sonique Love. I think that she's
just
so,
I was just gonna say that.
You know.
Although, let me just say, and I don't know if you've ever lip synced against her, but I was very impressed this last season with Silky Nutmeg Ganache. And her lip sync performances were incredible.
Yeah.
Like, well, her redemption was just...
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It blew me away. She blew me away.
Speaking of evolution, though, I really liked that segment. Like, I liked the game within a game.
Yeah.
And a lot of people didn't. Or not a lot of people didn't. I shouldn't say that. I think some people, it took some time getting used to that.
Yeah.
Even some of the contestants were like, what the fuck? This is never ending. I'm like, girl, you are getting more airtime.
Right.
Relax. I don't know why you're upset.
I know, but I love that Aquaria exactly. was like, I'm set. I love that Aquaria was like, I'm done. I was like, all right. All
right.
Cool.
Right.
Ridiculous. Look, anyway.
Here's the thing. It's just all like everybody, I feel like we get to a point where we expect a specific format, but like we were saying earlier, the show is constantly evolving. They're constantly going to do things to like switch it up and keep us interested. And so like, yeah, I feel like a game within a game is inevitable. Like y'all should have seen it coming.
That's how I feel.
What was the most surprising thing about competing on Drag Race that you didn't, like, what was the thing that was like, oh shit, it's done this way that you didn't know beforehand? Or what kind of shocked you when you finally got on?
How quick the time goes by. Like, we achieve so much. Honestly, like, so much within a short amount of time. It's kind of like, insane. And this comes from like a contestants level, crew level, like Rue level, like, you know, it's just like it is a well-oiled machine, and like you have to be like such a good professional that is like ready to be on it. Like, you really got to deliver and perform because they have so much to do in a short amount of time. So you got to be ready to keep up. That was like definitely the pace of it. I was like, woo.
And like, do you have to be good at sewing? Because I felt like Simone, that's what I always want to say. I felt like she wasn't as good, or at least said she wasn't as good compared to other ones, but she won the whole thing. So I like don't know how much it matters.
She also has Gigi's mom, who's like,
right, yeah. I don't, how much does it matter?
I feel like there are other, I mean, there's, I feel like we have plenty of winners who couldn't sew. I mean, I know Sharon Needles, she couldn't sew during the construction challenges. Jinx Monsoon couldn't do it. Bob the drag queen struggled with the
bag. Oh my god, bags. Oh my god.
You know what I'm saying? We have like queens who are winners who have like struggled with construction and making an outfit. So you don't need to be a sewer. You just need to have style, you know, and you need to know how to apply that into a look and like have something that can at least hold itself together down the runway for two walks. That's all. And while you,
it is a lot about attitude. I feel like it is like attitude and how you tackle it. Cause like,
yeah, you have to communicate a vision, you know? And I feel like as long as they see that you have a vision and it's like executed well, then it's like, okay, there we go.
Well, even Lala Ree's bag challenge from last season, not the All-Stars the season before that, like I was banking on Lala Ree actually winning like fan favorite at the end. Cause I was like, she just, like, I hated that look, but I love that look. Like, it was one of the more iconic looks in the season because it was so terrible.
It got lost in my wrapping paper drawer where I keep all the bags when people give me bags of wine when they come over. Stuck it all over them.
But I felt like her attitude about it was, like, infectious and saved her in so many ways. So it is about, like, I guess the style you also bring to it, even though it was, like, abysmal. Like,
I love Lala Ree. Like, I love her. But my mother texted me about that outfit. You know, if my mom is texting me, being like, what was that? You know, it was like really rough.
Terrible.
But you know what? It's iconic. It's memorable.
That's what I'm saying.
And that's really what, at the end of the day, like, you just want to create memorable moments, things that people will still be talking about later. You know, if it's not successful, you can turn it around and like make it something that's still, you know, cute and funny for the sake of the show. Cause it's like everything about Drag Race is like really like, you know, lighthearted. I mean, as far as like the challenges are concerned, like, yes, we do get like, here's some like girls reveal stories about their personal lives that we get to connect with. But like, as far as challenges are concerned, it's really all about having fun.
True. Well, before we transition to a really fun, or I think fun game, but we'll see what you think about that. I want to talk about your podcast really quickly, because we actually have had America's Next Top Model contestants on our show. We had, you know, one of the first openly, or I think she, wasn't she the first
I
openly?
Think she was.
Yeah. First openly lesbian contestant.
Kim.
OG.
Yeah.
We had Kim Stoltz. Yep.
Kim Stoltz. Yep.
Kim was on the show, and we've had others. You have a podcast that really, like, talk us through why you created the podcast Wanna Be On Top. Like, have you talked to Tyra ever?
Like, because ANTM is a kind of a hot button,
controversial,
a little hot button issue for some people.
Yes. Okay. So I came up with the idea for Wanna Be On Top because we were in a pandemic, and so I had a lot of free time to watch more TV than normal. And I went and I revisited America's Next Top Model. I was, you know, just kind of chatting with a friend. I was like, you know what? I could just like honestly never get sick of talking about this show. And I had already been in conversations with Forever Dog. They were like, you know, we really want to develop a podcast with you. Like, just kind of like think about things that you want to do. And I had tossed around a couple ideas for like the better part of like 10 months. I was like, I can't really find anything that I want to like do for like a podcast. And then I was just all like, wait a second. I could talk about America's Next Top Model until the cows come home, you know? So that was like, that was the start of it. And it has just been such a fun adventure for me. Like, I've had the opportunity to talk with like several contestants, and like, especially because we're starting from like the very beginning, it is really super nostalgic. And like, whenever we have guests on, we're always just like, you know, girl, like, what were you up to in 2005? Like, what were you listening to? What were you wearing? What was your hair like? Because we love to like paint that picture of like where we were culturally at that time, because I feel like America's Next Top Model is an amazing time capsule. Like,
true.
And I just true. Love to go back and like revisit it from a different perspective now, but also from the perspective of who I was and where I was when I was watching it for the first time. So it's great. I love having these conversations. I love breaking these episodes down, reliving it, and talking with our guests and like with the girls. It's just been so much fun.
Who's your famous iconic contestant on America's Next Top Model?
Tiffany. Well, that's mine. Sorry. Love Tiffany.
Tiffany is a solid choice.
I mean, we were all rooting for Tiffany. Tyra was right. So
that's just
true. We just actually recorded. We actually just recorded. And because we're on season 4 right now, we actually just recorded an episode where we really have what I felt was like a brilliant conversation about Tiffany. I will say, okay, for me, contestant wise, oh, it's so hard because I love all of them so much for so many different reasons. For me, I would say between Mercedes from Cycle 2.
And
Yaya from Cycle 3.
Yaya's gorgeous.
Yaya, like gorgeous, really.
Just dripping with gorgeousness.
Like,
but like, do you even get into like Adrian Curry?
Adrian Curry, okay, look, I'm
not saying she's a great contestant. I'm just saying, think about some of these contestants. Yeah. Right. And like what like, ended
honestly,
up
honestly, she's
happening.
from Joliet, Illinois, which is right next to Plainfield. So I'm just all like, okay, totally know like kind of like where she comes from. Cause I'm like, okay, similar. Loved her on Surreal Life and My Fair Brady.
I know.
But we were, okay, so me and my co-host and top model historian, I refer to him as Maxwell Esposito. We were like kind of following up with her blog, and you know, she's very anti-vax, very she is you know what, the pandemic has had multiple effects on people in different ways, but yeah, she is sure very has. Adrian is on a journey right now.
Okay. It is funny to like think of those names though. I mean, before we recorded today, I looked at a couple of them, like Tokara.
Oh, Tokara.
Tokara
like,
was great.
Oh my, Tokara, Jasmine.
Oh my God, Jasmine. Oh my, well, oh my God. And now
you're
my,
not there
my
yet.
Chicago
you're not there
girl,
yet.
Jasmine. Now, honestly, if we're going to talk, she's probably going to be so. Honestly, if I'm going to talk about who I've had like more actual experiences with, like Jasmine. Like, as far as, like, Chicago nightlife, like, I've had so many experiences with Jasmine because she's still a Chicago girl. She comes to the club. She always looks so good. And so, yeah, no, even though it's been, like, so many years since these girls, like, original seasons, they all just, like, look amazing.
Yeah.
I'm like, they haven't aged.
I mean, let me just say, I work at Bravo, Eva Marcel, hello, season 3 winner, I believe, who had that spider shot with that spider,
oh,
like, on her
yes.
face. Like, still
yes.
looks, was an Atlanta housewife, still uh-huh. is, like, one of the most beautiful people I've ever seen in real life. Just, like,
yeah.
looks the same from
yeah.
whenever her season was, like,
even Ava, another
ago.
Bravo
it's
crossover.
It's just
yes.
crazy, like, just insane.
Okay, well, clearly
so,
we are happy to be guests on your podcast because we could talk about this
yeah.
all day long.
Yes, let's do it.
We do
it.
Like to play sometimes, Shay, some just like silly rapid fire
silly
games. And just right. so that if you hate this, Darren doesn't take the fall, I'll take it on myself. I came up with a little game called Is She Bougie or Banji? And for our white listeners who probably have no idea what the fuck we're saying, could you explain maybe why I picked
yeah.
the name Bougie and Banji
yes.
and what Bougie and Banji is for those that don't understand?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. So I have always described myself as equal parts bougie and bougie. Bougie, you know, meaning like bourgeoisie, kind of like fancy, like ooh la la, she. And then bougie meaning just like, you know, street, like around the way kind of girl. Like I have, right? Because like, okay. My babysitter when I was like young, her name was Flo. Like, shout out to Flo. Her nickname for me was Bougie because I was just such a particular little child.
I love
just,
that.
Like, always just kind of had like a very like high end taste and standards, and she loved it. She spoiled me down. And so she would always call me her little Bougie. And then like Bougie, obviously, because I would always spend time going from like Plainfield out to Lockport to like my grandparents who like lived just like right next to the projects. And I still have like all of those memories of like, you know, where I come from. So like there's like these roots of like my ancestry, but then also there's these aspirations of like, you know, the bougie life that I've always wanted to live.
I love it.
And both have their positives. Yeah, both have their positives. Balance.
I also couldn't identify with being half bougie and bougie more in my own life. So yeah, I have to tell it runs deep. And so
yeah,
this is just a little fun game. We're going to throw some characters up. It really means nothing. And hopefully you'll be into that. All right. Welcome to the show, Bougie or Bougie. Right now, we have in front of Shea Coulee, Ms. Cracker, friend of the podcast, and Jujubee.
Okay. So Ms. Cracker, is she Bougie or Bougie? What?
Already tripping you up.
I'm really, I know. I'm like, okay. She is, honestly, she is neither bougie nor bougie. She is salty. Yes. That is Miss Crack.
That's amazing.
Now, Jujubee, no, she's bougie. She is a bougie round the way girl who loves big dicks and fried chicken. And I feel like that just in and of itself, like, you know, explains Miss Jujubee.
Okay.
Of course.
Darren.
Chicago hot dog or hamburgers? Here we go. These are the two things. What is a Chicago hot dog to you?
Okay. So a Chicago hot dog is sesame seed bun with onion, mustard,
pickle,
relish, and pickle.
Right.
And like, okay, it has to be like a little pickle spear that's like nestled in there.
I know.
Right, you gotta nestle it in just right in the side. Okay. And sometimes hot peppers too. If you're down with the spice. Ooh. Okay. So that to me is, I'm gonna say it's bougie because the Chicago hot dog is resourceful. Okay. It was created during the Depression because it was an easy way for people to get like a quote unquote cheap, well rounded meal because it's like protein, bread, different types of like little vegetables and things like that. So people could get like a 5-cent hot dog, you know, and like feed their family. So that to me, I was like, that resourcefulness and that's the heart of Chicago, bougie. Burger, I mean, I just feel like burger is just like standard. It's neither, you can have a bougie burger and you can have a bougie burger.
Right, you can dress it up or you can dress it down.
Do I prefer a bougie burger? I most absolutely do. I go to this place called Vincent in Chicago. It's like this little bistro and they make just like a really, really good burger. And it's just like, tasty.
Into it.
I love that. I'm fucking hungry now. Okay. Next one.
Carson Kressley or Miss Michelle? Who is bougie and who is bougie?
Oh, that is easy. Carson is bougie. Michelle is bougie. My fellow Plainfield sister, but she's from Plainfield, New Jersey. Good old Plainfield, New Jersey. No, she's definitely the bougie one. He's the bougie one.
This is my favorite one.
This one's my favorite. Tyra Banks in this specific outfit from Dancing with the Stars, which unclear what the outfit was, or this weird like some type of Stegosaurus from Jurassic Park. It's
Tyra Banks or a Dilophosaurus.
That's scary.
Specifically from Jurassic Park.
Okay, so Tyra for me is giving full on bougie. I love this look. I absolutely love this look. It's giving me like, if it were like gold, it would be like 80s Terry Mugler on Iman going down like the French, like Parisian, like fashion week, like runway. See, people would be like, oh, it looks so crazy. I'm like, honey, this is a reference. We've seen this. And I'm like, and if you know, you know. So I'm going to say bougie for Tyra on that. What is this called?
Dilophosaurus. A Dilophosaurus.
From Jurassic Park. Yes. Remember? This? They're so
from
scary.
Jurassic Park, yes.
Yes. Yes. Dilophosaurus. I mean, look, all I know is like the T-Rex, the Velociraptor, the Pterodactyl.
Oh, God.
And what's the one with the long neck? Is that a stegosaurus? Oh. No, that's the one with the spikes on the back. Stegosaurus.
Yeah, that's, yeah.
What's the little long neck curvature?
Brontosaurus. Brontosaurus.
Brontosaurus.
Yes.
See, I couldn't even remember that. That's about my... And this is a
Dilophosaurus?
Guys, Dilophosaurus. I just would like you to know that this is a lot of pre-production on my end and investigative research into the dinosaur world.
I know, and you gave me the hard word.
Yes. I'm going to say Dilophosaurus is Banji just based off of the name. That's a Banji-ass name, Dilophosaurus. Okay.
That is a Banji-ass name. Two more.
Who is Bougie and Banji? Yes. Our friend of the podcast, Alaska, or Sharon Needles?
So Sharon Needles is just spooky ooky. So that's Sharon. She's neither bougie or banji. She's spooky ooky. Alaska is
Alaska wants to be bougie, but she's banji.
She wants to be bougie, but I feel like, and she's neither banji. I feel like she's just good old fashioned camp.
Fair.
She is. God, I fucking okay. Last but certainly not least. Your girls. You got Liz and Darren over here.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Based off of, I know our listeners can't see this, but based off of the photo, I'm going to say that Liz is bougie, Darren is banty because the outfit.
Those are both my clothes.
Outfit.
But you can pick up on the attitude, which is so right, that she's attitude. So bougie. Like, Liz is so bougie anyway. Like, you nailed it. Uh-huh. You nailed it.
Look at her that white wine.
Oh, my God. It's a Sauvignon Blanc. Thank you very much.
Exactly. That's why you are so fucking bougie, Liz. Oh, my God. Thank you so much for playing Scissor Me the Thing. Sorry, Scissor Me
it's,
This.
No,
excuse
me.
You were on Scissor Me
This. Darren, it was called Bougie
or Banji.
Yes.
I know, but like the last segment is always, you know, we're scissoring with Shay today. Shay, it was an honor to get to talk to you. We could have you on and talk about America's Next Top Model and reality for days. We would love to have you back. Where can people follow you, watch everything that you're doing, and just crushing the scene? Tell us.
Yes, you can follow me on all social media, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok. At Shea Coulee, SHEACOULEE.
Notice not Facebook.
I mean, you can follow me on there, but you're going to get is some reposts from Instagram, girl. So you might as well go straight to the source. I'm working on some fun little projects here. I'm like just really focusing on writing this music. I've been like really getting into it. There's some really cute little things. So this year is about to be fun. I'm going to be doing a Christmas tour. So, you know, look out for me on Murray and Peter Presents a Drag Queen Christmas. I'll be coming to a city near you November
through
December.
Liz,
and then, you know, we're going to finish out 2021 and have a good time. I'm going to get nested into the new place.
And your podcast, Want to Be on Top.
Yes. And also, yes, Want to Be on Top. Wherever you listen to podcasts, you can download the show. Follow me on Forever Dog and where we post all tons of content for Want to Be on Top. It's great. Oh, and buy my soap, 100K, my 100K bar with Quiet Girl. It's an amazing shea butter
it's
soap.
It's beautiful too.
It smells so good. It's patchouli, ylang ylang, neroli, and jojoba beads. It's super, I love it.
Yes.
And Shea Coulee, check it out.
She bougie.
Yeah, the soap is bougie and the beer is banji.
Oh my God, I love it. Well, you can follow my bougie ass at Listen to Liz.
And my Banji ass at Carpe Darren.
Banji ass at Carpe Darren. And you can follow our bougie and Banji self at SIAT podcast. Yeah. Shay, thank you so much.
We love you. Thank you, Shay.
Thank you. You're the best.
Scissoring Isn't a Thing is a production of Embassy Row. Our executive producer is Sarni Rogers. This episode was produced by Alexa Machia and Anna Marie Johnson. You can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at SIAT Podcast. See you next Tuesday.